Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. We redesigned Entree Architect Academy, our private online membership program, to better meet your needs with more options and less cost. Build a better business. Be a better architect. To learn more, visit the homepage at entrearchitect.com. Entree Architect Podcast, episode 166. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Architects are trained to find solutions. We have a superpower that others don't have. We can see a problem and find a creative way to solve that problem. That gives us a tremendous opportunity. Architecture is a very big profession. There are many opportunities for us to lead in the built environment as traditional practitioners, but there can also be those same skills. We can use those same skills to look beyond the built environment. We could take on roles in our society in any position that requires creativity and solutions to critical problems. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, Beyond the Box, Architects Practicing Beyond Traditional Practice with Katie Kripo. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks and CARB, BQE Software, and RCAT. FreshBooks. Get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. And NCARB, helping architects reach their career goals. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. And BQE Software, the makers of ArchiOffice, office and project management software designed specifically for architects. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/BQE. And RCAT, the leading online resource for free building product information. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/RCAT. Katie Kripo, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm honored to be here. Thanks for spending some time with us. Katie is an architect and a business consultant based in London. She's an advocate for and a practitioner of social impact design. And she's the founder and editor of Design Effects, which is an online platform that inspires, teaches, and connects people involved and interested in social impact design and lots of other things, sort of architects thinking out of the box, really, is what we're focused on here. At designeffects.com, you'll see Katie's blog, lots of resources, and an opportunity for consulting. She works one-on-one with people. So if you're interested, go check it out, designeffects.com. Katie, welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
I want to start, like we start with every episode here with a guest, I want to know your personal story. I want you to share your origin story. So go way back to where you discovered architecture, what inspired you to become an architect, and give us that story from that point in your life to where you are today.
Yeah. I think probably the earliest memory I have of when I might have started to engage with architecture, and it's kind of surprising, but when I was 5 years old, I was living in a home that we were moving from, and I remember kind of drawing the plan of my bedroom. And the reason why I remember it is because we had this red orange carpet and like hideous like 80s carpet. It was probably more like 70s color, red orange. And I had colored all the carpet area in the plan. And it was kind of me capturing that space and how I wanted my new bedroom to be. And it's a really, I don't know, it's kind of a bizarre thing.
You're
to
documenting the existing conditions.
yeah, it's like such a bizarre thing, I think, to do when I was that young. But I think that was me already trying to experiment with capturing space and how I was using it, and even just what the color and that experience meant to me. So, yeah.
So that was your early inspiration or your first taste of architecture. What happened? What sort of inspired you to become an architect?
I think it's my parents are, my dad's an engineer, and then my mom is a teacher and she studied art. And so I think a big influence was in seeing the two of them and their kind of different personalities and approaches to the way that they did things and the way that they kind of inspired us to be creative. My dad was very like precision and technique, and my mom was more about the expression of that. And so it's kind of the blend of practical and creative that really drew me to to architecture. But as I started studying it and practicing it, I really wanted to reconnect with the people.
Yeah. And so once you sort of decided that you wanted to be an architect, where'd you go to school? And when you decided to become an architect, was your plan to sort of become a traditional architect where you design and, create buildings and focus on that? Or was it right from the beginning that you were, because you sort of focus now on architects that are not practicing traditional architecture. They're looking beyond that, sort of taking the skills as an architect, and which I love, I get really excited about that conversation, which I'm looking forward to having right now. tell us about that, from starting at architecture school to where you are now. How did you get to where you are now from architecture school?
So I decided to study at Tulane University in New Orleans. And I grew up in California, so it was a very different and distant place from where I had spent the first 18 years of my life. And it was an opportunity for me to really explore and grow in a new city, around new people, kind of redefine who I am as a person during that time. And also just really, learn about a career path that I thought I would be pursuing. So the traditional architecture path was what I thought I would be pursuing. But I also know that for me, I ask a lot of questions and I'm always trying to understand, why do we do this? What does this mean? How can we do it better? What are the gaps? And so I think I had part of me that wanted to kind of fulfill that path, which I did. And I did all my licensing and training after I graduated. So I could really understand and empathize with the process of becoming an architect. But I still had this other part of me that wanted to just improve it and like improve how we're doing it, and but also like reconnect it to who we are as people and why we choose to enter it in the first place. And then also like reconnect it to the people that we're trying to impact and the people that are occupying and using the spaces that we design and create.
So what kind of architecture did you practice before you became licensed? What type of firms were you working with?
I was working mainly with small firms that did residential and kind of urban repurpose and regeneration. So
were you still based in New Orleans at that point?
I did. Well, I was in New Orleans. I worked with a firm there that's really, really wonderful. They do really great work. I then moved to New York and spent a year there working with a residential practice, and then moved to San Francisco. And that's where I started to get into more of the commercial and like developer-led projects, which it was fun to just scale up and really like see something that was much bigger and a lot more people were using. But I still had this piece of me that I felt disconnected from the people. And when I'd walk around office spaces and office floors that we were going to be redesigning, I wanted to like talk to actual employees and like understand what was working for them and how we might be able to improve something going forward or make changes. But that was never really in the scope. But that was always kind of a curiosity of mine. Deep down. And now I know like there's, you know, programming and post-occupancy that people do. And people are kind of redefining how they're incorporating that connection to the process. But at the time, it wasn't really an option for me. So
when did that idea or that feeling that, you know, you're designing architecture, you're doing what, you know, you're trained to do, and something was missing. When did that become sort of conscious for you? When did that transition start where, you know what, I need to do, or was there sort of this void for a while that you were just trying to figure out and then finally you connected to it? So how did that transition happen?
I think a big part of it was that I had always kind of done volunteering projects on the side, and that was a way for me to connect back with people and feel like I was, you know, supporting other people that may not have the resources there wasn't that initial connection to my profession and my skills. But that volunteer work was really fulfilling, and to be able to just see the change and see people just become like more empowered and more confident from what you're doing with them. That led me to then take a course, a night course from Berkeley where I met other people, and it was called Architecture as Activism. And so that kind of showed me how to link those two and how to bring back the connection to people and to the people that you want to work with into your practice. And so that kind of set me on the journey that I've been on, for, I don't know, 6 years, 7 years now.
And so that's what led you to start focusing on social impact design.
Yeah.
Can you define what that is? What specifically social impact design is?
Yeah. So I say that it is, and the way that I define it is that it is working with marginalized or underserved communities and developing products or services that help them create a better living or a better environment for themselves.
And that's all encompassing from a design point of view. It's architecture and products and systems and everything that, that goes along.
Yeah.
And so that, so that you, you were introduced to that at Berkeley, decided to, you know, the bells went off, you know, clearly this is what I'm interested in. And so you started to pursue that and started doing some work, you know, practicing social impact design, and then started helping others, started became, you became an advocate for social impact design. So talk about that a little bit. So, so talk about, you know, what type of work that you did, and then what that next level was, where you said, "Okay, I want to teach other people how to do this."
Yeah. So, it started where we were a group of about five or six people, and we were looking to work with other nonprofits or NGOs or charities that we could connect with, and identify what. If there was an opportunity to help them improve their spaces or something, you know, that they needed. And through that, that kind of goes back to that programming question, like what is it that needs to be done, if anything? And so there's a lot of kind of upfront discovery work that's really important, especially when you're working with nonprofits or charities that don't have a lot of money, that don't come like with a big budget or a big team that already knows what they're looking for. They just need somebody to help them kind of bring that to life. So there's a lot of work beforehand, and that then through working with a team of people and a group that we're all architects, but we didn't really have business acumen or even organizational acumen, that kind of set me on a path to look at like how are other people actually doing this, and how are other firms that say that they do social impact or public interest design work, how are they doing it? And that there was one site, John Kerry's site, that was documenting like events and news and stuff, but I wanted like more information. I wanted kind of the details, and it's a lot of what Proactive Practice now has documented is and is sharing with people. And so it's not only understanding how people were doing what they were doing, but how can we actually do what we want to do? So, and that's, that then led me just to kind of pursue filling the information and knowledge gap online, through design effects, through interviewing and, speaking with people, and just trying to understand how they do what they do, why they do it, what they do, what, you know, their challenges are. And then also running Impact Design Hub for almost 3 years, and helping to just kind of build the dialogue.
What is Impact Design Hub?
That is a site that is funded by the Autodesk Foundation. And it started as a curatorial news and event and job site, and it's now moved more into editorial and more interviews with people that are practicing social impact, public interest, community-led design. So,
I have a you know, in my community, and actually a lot of younger architects, you know, the generation that's coming up through through school and becoming architects now, many of them want to give back. They want to, they see this social need. They see the skills they have, and they want to use their skills to impact society in a positive way. And I see a lot of them sort of gravitating towards nonprofit. And when a young architect comes to me and says, I want to start this nonprofit, I say, well, how are you going to fund that nonprofit? Because nonprofits need money. They don't run for free. They need funding. And so sometimes nonprofits are funded by grants. Sometimes they're funded by donations. My recommendation is to build a business and then have that business fund the nonprofit. What is your thought on that? And when you have somebody come to you and says, I want to make an impact. I want to change this problem. I see this problem. I have a solution for it. I'm going to start this nonprofit to make this problem get solved. What is your advice for somebody like that?
Well, I always like to advise people to start with a project. Don't start an organization until you have a project, you have a client, and you can validate the demand for what you're doing. I think there's this, and I had the same eagerness and like, I need to, you know, build everything and I need to figure it all out and then I'll go find somebody that is ready for it. And that's kind of what, you know, some of the early projects that I did, that was what it was about. But in actuality, it's more about having that idea, but validating it before you do anything, before you create anything, before you print business cards or any of that. Just go out and talk to the actual people, identify those people, and then just get to know them and spend, you know, 20, 30 minutes with them, just asking them questions about what they do, why they do it, what have been their challenges. And then you can pitch something to them. And it's kind of like the lean startup method.
I was waiting for you to stop. Yeah. So it's the exact thought I had, is the lean startup. Yeah. If anybody doesn't know, it's a book called The Lean Startup, and it's about starting businesses, really. That's what the book is about. Yeah. But you can do it with anything, with any big project that you want to start, big organization. You start with this little tiny piece. You start with a minimum viable product, and you test it. You know, instead of going out and starting an entire organization, maybe you offer one little service and you pitch it to a small group of people and see if they are interested in that. And then if they are, then you can build on that and improve on it and then start building a bigger organization through that. So that's very good advice. And then see if it works. And if it works, then grow it. It'll also give you the credibility from when you do go looking for funding to say, look, I have all these people who are interested in what we're looking to build because we've tested it and we know that it works, rather than building that big organization and then finding out that people aren't interested in the way you have presented it.
Because I think sometimes when you go down that route as well, you become so concerned with the funding that you kind of lose sight of who is it and do they actually even need what I want to offer in the first place. And so it's finding that kind of middle ground between this is what I am very passionate and this is what I feel like is my purpose, but also like who is it that actually potentially needs that? And then where can we kind of sit in between and find that synergy to actually make it happen, and that opportunity to make it happen.
Yeah.
And then from there, like grow it and see what comes about.
Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, RCAT, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE Software. You already know all about RCAT and their free BIM objects and their CAD details and their specifications and product information, all free, ready for you to use. Well, today I want to share something new from RCAT. It's called Charette. Charette is a tool for sharing and collaborating with your colleagues and clients online in real time. You can upload photos and files, share specs and product information directly from the RCAT database, as well as from other sources on the internet. I've been playing with Charette in beta for a while now, and it's really cool. And now it's available to you. I encourage you to go check it out. Visit RCAT online and click the Charette icon right there on the homepage. And like everything offered at RCAT, Charette is a free tool for us small firm architects too. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/RCAT. 192 hours. You wish you had that much free time? That works out to about 2 business days every month. And when you're a small firm architect using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of administration time that you could save in 2017. That's time that you can spend doing the things you love, like being an architect. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/freshbooks to access FreshBooks for free. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Do you know someone in your firm who's always dreamed of getting licensed, but was unable to complete the experience requirements? Well, maybe that person's you. Now you can get back on track with NCARB's new AXP portfolio. With this option, seasoned professionals can complete the Architectural Experience Program, the AXP, formerly known as the IDP, by submitting an online portfolio. Along with meeting your state's education and examination requirements, the portfolio will help you and your employees get one step closer to becoming a licensed architect. Learn more about NCARB's AXP portfolio at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. One of the most often requested resources here at Entree Architect is project management software. How do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects? BQE Software, an AIA Advantage partner and the makers of ArchiOffice, will show us how. ArchiOffice is the only office and project management software designed specifically for architects. It will help us manage people and projects and allow us to focus on designing great architecture. Whether you're working remotely or on site, ArchiOffice allows you to monitor the status of your projects and tasks and send out invoices in an accurate and timely manner. Entree Architect podcast listeners can get a fully functional 15-day trial of ArchiOffice today at entrearchitect.com/BQE. So, RCAT, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE Software, please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. And so you've focused on social impact design, but you've sort of evolved and have grown. That's still a big piece of what you're doing, but you've sort of grown bigger than that. Your ideas are really any architect that sort of wants to grow beyond that traditional practice, that you have this idea to solve this problem or to start a new business that you can use your skills as an architect to go do something. Architects mm-hmm. that are pushing the boundaries of what traditional architecture is. Talk about that transition from, what sort of, you got involved in the social impact design, you started focusing on the business end of those kind of things, right? And sort of what inspired you to say, okay, I need to focus on more than just this.
Yeah. So a lot of it has just come about through conversations that I've had with different architects and designers, and understanding, and also following just business communities in general, and how we're all want to provide value for others. Like, that's the essence of why we work and why we spend 40 plus hours a week doing this, is because we do in some way want to contribute and see what we contribute valued. And that doesn't matter, if you attach billions of dollars or no dollars to it, it's still that value and understanding what that value is that you give and who is ready and needs it. And so that's what's kind of brought me back to it's not only about social impact, but people that are, people even like yourself, like you provide value for a certain group of people that are in need of that. And it is social impact as well. And no it's doubt. What, you define as social impact. And so, and a lot of people that I work with, the social part and that community part is one piece of it, but there's other things as well that drive them to do what they do. So for me, it's now looking and helping people identify that the vision and the change that they want to see, what that means for their skills and their interests, but also the people that they want to work with. And then also like how to kind of tie all that together. And so Yeah, it's not social impact is very important, and I think it can come in a lot of different formats, and it's up to the individual to decide how they want to make that come about in whatever way that makes sense to them. So yeah, I don't know if that
Yeah, no, it absolutely
if that
does.
answers
It can
it.
can you give an example of somebody doing that? Somebody you're working with or somebody that you're inspired by, of somebody that has that idea to sort of push the boundaries and what the process was?
So, I guess I'll describe it without maybe giving the name just because I haven't gotten their permission.
Sure, yeah.
But
Yeah, and
one of
you could just be generic about what it is and who it is, but sort of talk about if somebody who's listening wants to do that, has this idea, this is some big idea. They want to change some big problem in society, and they have a solution for it, but they don't know how to start. How does somebody start, and then where can they what can they do after they start? What's that process like?
So, I guess one of the clients that I'm working with has done well. She actually hasn't done a lot of traditional architecture. She's worked in architecture practices, but she has community engagement, a lot of experience in just interviewing people, researching, just going out to different communities. She's like a very natural connector and a natural storyteller. And she is looking at how to apply her experience and her interests beyond just architecture firms, because that's where she's been for a while. So what we're looking and what we're working on is kind of identifying and defining that 5-year vision for her. And kind of going through, like, what does it look like? What are you doing? Who are you surrounded by? Where are you working? What is that like? What is the day to day? But also, like, where do you find the fulfillment and the joy through and the purpose through what you're doing? And then, like, coming back to today and where she is, like, who are the people that are kind of doing something similar to you so that you get to, get to know them, and just it's a quick like information interview with them, and just asking them about what they do for work, what does their day-to-day look like, what are their challenges. And so she's looking at a range of different people, like an anthropologist, a like BBC radio host that focuses on stories. So it's looking at like all these different kind of careers that I don't think most architects would maybe even consider, especially when you enter when you're 18 years old. You think I'll probably have to, like, what I need to do is own my own practice. And, she's kind of blowing all of the walls off of that and saying, like, who is talking, doing, like, representing in some ways. And so, after doing those conversations, then it's like picking, the components that really resonate with her and crafting that vision around herself of like what are potential opportunities for me to embody this and actually start to do it, and then who is actually looking for it as well. So it's not only identifying like what you're really good at, but it's also identifying who are the people that are in need of what you do. What do they look like? What are they looking for? And beginning to communicate that and putting language to it as well, so that she can reach out to them and start to make the connections with them.
So you're
So.
so you 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 start with visioning, right? So you start with your vision,
Yeah.
figure out what your life would look like 5 years from now, what that big idea might look like 5 years from now, then come back to where you are today, do some research, connect with people who you think might sort of get you in that direction, and focusing on people outside of where your comfort zone is, basically, right? Look at influencers and other organizations, other leaders doing things that are similar, but maybe in other industries, reaching out to them and actually having conversations with them. Is that what they're doing?
You're actually connecting
with those people, which do two things. You know, you obviously learn a lot, but you're also building a really powerful network that can help you grow your platform. And then you start figuring out what that platform is, right? That's what you said.
Yeah.
So you sort of, and so sometimes that platform might be online. Sometimes that platform might be speaking. Sometimes that platform might be writing a book. Could be building a physical business in a city. Could be starting a nonprofit organization that does, touch people in a very specific way.
And we're at that phase right now where it's looking at like, what is it? What are those opportunities that she wants to pursue? And what are the different avenues?
I could see that very interesting and exciting at that moment. So
it
she
is.
Has
yeah,
so she has her vision defined. She has her information fixed. So now, how are you doing that? Are you doing that sort of as a brainstorm and say, these are all the different ways that we can approach this, and then sort of narrow your way back down, or are specifics jumping out at you right away and this is the best way to approach it?
Yeah, I think so. We're going to be doing that session very soon. So, we'll see what it turns into. But I think for me, it's like always going back to that vision of where you want to be and what, and you never quite know if it is the right path, but I think there's always that kind of gut feeling of it's not only like where I can grow and where I can develop what I want to do, but it's also people around me that are going to support me and help me get there. So that's the other, a really important piece that I think sometimes when we just look at a role or if we see something or, you know, we know of an organization and we just want to be there, but it's also like following who are the people that are going to be around you every day. And is that like the environment and the space that's going to help you get to where you want to go? Not only, you know, you trying to fit in with them, but there has to be, you know, a mutual support and, I guess, like empowerment of each other.
Do you have advice on building a team? I mean, every big idea. I know this is going to get into a deep conversation here because if you've done all that work and you really want to make a big difference, like with Entree Architect, I want to change the world through architects, small individual architects building better businesses, impacts profession. Profession goes out and changes the world. That's how I look at this. It's a big thing, way bigger than me, but it's still mostly me. I have some support staff. I have freelancers. I have some support, but it needs to be much bigger than me to get to where I want it to go.
So
what are some of those first steps on building that team? Because if you have this big idea, you know, no great success happens isolated. It has to happen with a team. You can't do it by yourself. So what are some of the steps to get to that team that can actually make that impact?
That's a really good question. It's something I haven't worked directly with people on, advise them on. I've done it somewhat with Impact Design Hub and with even the past business that I did with a colleague of mine. And I feel like it's probably the advice that a lot of people give, but it's really understanding where you want to focus and what you want to do and where your skills and your personality and like the assets that you have, how you want to drive your energy towards that, and then what you need to balance or complement or supplement that you want to work on.
Right.
And so one way that is that I used in the past is actually using personality tests. Which is kind of ridiculous, but I, you know, find a lot of insight through them.
Yeah, I agree.
And
we've talked about that before on the podcast. We've talked about strength finders. We've talked about we've talked about some of the other ideas as well. So how would you use that? How would you use one of those personality tests?
So there's a few. I guess one is the ID, which is I think it's Linksys. I'll have to, I can send you the link after. But that really talks about like where you get the most fulfillment out of your work. So what really drives you, and it's instinctive drives, that's it. And so that I think that one really helps in understanding where people should be focused, and where to focus their efforts in a business. So for instance, I was working with a friend, and she was very like ideas creation, like she's great in brainstorms and getting like people really excited. And that was definitely her strength, and that's where she got the most energy out of what she did. And mine is I'm the completer, and so I really enjoy like creating the plan, figuring out, and figuring like let's get us there, like keep that vision, and let's like drive us to that so that we can fulfill this. And so that's like how we kind of separated. So we looked at what were the tasks that we needed to do for the business, and how can we each kind of pair them with our own drives and the things that we got the most energy from.
Yeah. So you
So.
need to know your strengths. You need to know your passion, your purpose, and then figure out what you don't have, what your weaknesses are, what you're not interested in, but are required to be successful, and to find people compatible with those strengths, and build a team around that. And certainly, you know, what's I think passion and purpose are really important pieces to that you find people who are passionate about your mission. And understand your purpose and have similar purpose, really important pieces. And that's not easy. And I could tell you firsthand, that's building that team is very, very difficult. I mean, delegation to begin with for architects, because we're so focused on control, is difficult to begin with. But then, you know, building that team to create even just a regular, you know, traditional practice, or reaching out to these big ideas, building that team and getting the right people in the right seats is a really difficult piece of what we're all doing here. So what's sort of the next step for Katie Crapo? What's your future look like? Where are you moving to now? How does this grow to the next step?
I've been really enjoying the one-on-one consulting and working with architects. But similar to yourself, like I really want to help architects reconnect to why they entered the profession, find like bring back that joy and the creativity back into their work, and have them really determine what that value is for themselves, not what the profession says it is the value, and find the clients and build like the products and services to really meet those clients and meet the fulfillment that we all want through the profession and the field. I'm looking at and kind of developing a online program to help people define their vision, like really craft that vision, and find the like I guess the resources or the tools and kind of like the follow-up support for them to make it happen and to not have to wait until you're retired or something else comes along that allows you to do it. That's what I would love. I am gonna continue doing and what I really want to
The
see.
as soon as you started saying that you're look you know that you're, you want to work with people who want to sort of get back to the purpose and the reason they started in the first place, I heard in the back of our audience here 1,000 architects with a big exhale and say, "Yeah, that's me." You know, I because I know that they, you know, there are many of us that have gone through the process and have taken that journey and have found themselves in a place that they didn't really expect to be, and frankly, they don't want to be. That they have different idea of what they want to do, and so then that's what you do. You help those people find their purpose, reconnect with their passion, and build a new career and a new life. And so is there a place where these people can go to connect with you and reach out to you to maybe get some help in doing that?
Yeah. So at Design Effects, right now, that's where it's going to be living, but I will be transitioning over to my own website. But I can actually, I'll just direct you or share the link to the direct page for that to sign up to and either talk to me about one-on-one, potential one-on-one support, or the group program as well that is in development right now. So
when you have that, you could send that out. I'm happy to share it with all of my community. And we'll put it on the show notes. This is episode 166. EntreeArchitect.com/episode166 will get listeners to the show notes. Cool. Whenever it's ready, you can send it to us and we will put it on that page. Design Effects, it's AFFECTS. So okay. designeffects.com. And before we go, Katie, I want to ask you the question that I ask all my guests. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
So right now I'm reading Essentialism.
Oh, that's a good one. One of my favorites.
I know. and that's, I don't know, I think I would challenge people, especially people that like to write to-do lists, to cross something out that is not needed. It's not going to add to your business. It's not going to add to what you're doing. Just cross it off and don't do it.
That is a great answer to that question. So go through your to-do list of all the things that you think are important to you and cross one off.
Yeah.
Very good.
The least important one and give it up.
Yeah. Essentialism is the book. Greg McKeown, McKeown. We've talked about it before here. I share it all the time on social media. One of my favorites, Essentialism and The One Thing, are my two sort of get focused books. Love it.
Oh, cool. Check out the other one.
Yeah, Gary Keller. He's the founder of Keller Williams Real Estate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he's that's a great book, The One Thing. And Essentialism is sort of, you know, focusing on the things that are most important to you and really just the most essential things. And the one thing is, what is the one thing you should be doing today that will get you to where you want to go tomorrow? And that's what you should be focused on. So great answer. Love that. So Katie, thank you very much for spending some time with us here today and for sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
If you liked what we shared here today, complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode166. And I want you to share that link. I want you to share that link with somebody, just one person. Think of one person that you think might benefit from what we shared today and send them that link, entrearchitect.com/episode166. I'd appreciate that. And I am so excited about this new Entree Architect Academy. I want you to go check this out. I think that you're going to love what we are now offering. We've redesigned that private online membership program to better suit your needs. We listen to what you want, and now you can customize your membership to better work with your schedule and your budget. You can get all of our resources, our hybrid proposal, our foundations documents, all our digital courses, our masterclass expert webinars, all of the recordings, and have access to the live webinars, and have access to our powerful small group masterminds. That's the piece that people talk about. That's the thing that's changing lives, our small group masterminds. You can now get these in different levels, all at lower costs. So join your fellow entrepreneur architects today. Learn more right there on the homepage at entrearchitect.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you, I really do, I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short haul, frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.